You're listening to The Odds Cast, the original UFC betting podcast that's straight to the point. Hosted by leading MMA oddsmaker Nick Kalikas and MMA journalist Brian Heminger, they provide you the absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting. MMAoddsbreaker.com. Don't place your wagers without us.
Welcome to the Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 234 event, which takes place in Melbourne, Australia. I'd like to apologize quick for missing the last event and getting this podcast out late. We've been launching a new website, and things should hopefully be returning to normal with this next UFC event. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our first event of the year, Kyle Marley won one unit for UFC on ESPN plus one with his one unit free bet on Paige VanZant at minus 145 odds. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC 234 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, ESPN, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a bantamweight contest between Wuliji Buren, who is 11-6, and Jonathan Martinez, who is 9-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Martinez opened minus 180, the comeback on Buren at plus 140. All betting odds are courtesy of our sponsored sportsbook, BetDSI.eu. And currently over at BetDSI, we're looking at Martinez at minus 155, the comeback plus 125 on Buren. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. There is two action coming into this fight, but a little bit more action coming in on the dog here. Not a lot of love for Martinez for this fight here. I mean, both of these guys have had a rough going so far in the UFC. Obviously, Martinez has only had one fight, and in that one fight against Sukhmetov in his UFC debut, I thought he actually showed a lot of promise, a lot of potential, a lot of heart. But he got a little bit overmatched in his debut, and Sukhmetov ended up winning the fight, deservingly so. But we got to see what Martinez what he's made of a little bit there. And Buren, the same thing. I mean, I thought Buren, and the D fight making his UFC debut, that was a pretty competitive fight. He didn't get the W there, but then following it up, he actually performed relatively well against Vera in his second UFC fight. And then Vera ended up turning up the notch a little bit there as the fight progressed and getting him out of there. And it's funny because both these guys got hurt to the body in their last fight as well. So the body's a little susceptible, and they have footage of that they could study and probably try to replicate against each other here coming up in this matchup. So this should be an interesting fight. I think both these guys have potential. Buren continues to get better. He's a pretty strong fighter. He's going to have a little bit of a size advantage over Martinez. I mean, when I say strong, I'm saying physically strong. He's got some solid wrestling, good ground and pound. He's improving stand up a little bit as well. So you can definitely see that he's getting better. He's getting more experience. He's only 28 years old, so he continues to develop. But I think there's more upside to Martinez. I really like what I saw. Again, pre-UFC debut, that's a Sukhmetov fight that he just had. And even, like I said, during that fight, he definitely had his moments. But I think Martinez is a very complete fighter. I think he's just solid everywhere. I think he has killer instinct on the feet. He has clean technique. He's got some power to go along with it. On the ground, he's got some underrated wrestling, good takedown attempts as well. And then brutal ground and pound at times. And again, tough as nails. He won't quit. He's got the heart of a champion for sure. And there's a lot to like about him at age 24. So I think this is going to be a good fight. Both these guys are going to go back and forth a little bit. I think Buren might have an early start in the fight and maybe jump ahead a little bit. But as the fight progresses, I think Martinez is going to find his spots. And I think he's going to turn it up a notch again and end up probably finishing Buren. If not, I think he does win on the scorecards. But I think more so than anything else, I think Martinez is going to really bounce back from his debut loss and perform really well to the point where it's going to open up some eyes here. So like this fight, looking forward to it. It's a great way to start off the card, and I think Martinez is probably going to get the win, probably inside the distance. So my pick is Martinez, and I do think as the line drops a little bit, there might be some value opening up on Martinez as well.
You're rarely going to see as entertaining of a fight between two guys with a combined zero UFC wins and three UFC fights, but Buren and Martinez, they have been in competitive fights all three times in the three losses. So I think this time around, they're going to be extremely competitive with each other again. Martinez, I think, is the more well-rounded of the two. I think he's a little bit more polished. And on top of that, him at just being 24 years old has some good room for growth as well. The only thing he's really got going against him in this fight is, you know, he's going to be a little smaller. It says that he's only 2 inches smaller, but, you know, Nick said at the weigh-ins that, you know, he looked even smaller than that. So, Vernon, if he's able to utilize that size to his advantage, that could help him out quite a bit here. But other than that, I think Martinez is going to be the stronger striker, the more powerful striker. And I think if it goes to the ground, Martinez, if he can get top position, he could really drop the hammer here because, I mean, he had Sukumtat in a world of trouble when he had him on the ground. And if he can do that to somebody that's an established, solid UFC bantamweight like Sukumtat, I think he could definitely do it to Buren here. So I'm going to go with Jonathan Martinez. I think he gets the job done. I think he picks up that first UFC win. And unfortunately, I think Buren drops to 0-3 in the UFC. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Jalen Turner, who is 7-4, taking on Callan Potter, who is 17-7. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Turner opened -300, the comeback on Potter at +220. And right now, checking the line over at BetDSI, currently -225 for Turner. The comeback on Potter's at +185. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, more action coming in Potter's way as well. Tell you what, man, I mean, a lot of things to like about this fight as well. I think we're going to see some fireworks. Both these guys like to throw down. Both these guys are finishers. They both have the ability to stand and bang. And again, Potter is a little bit more of the grinding type of fighter. First of all, he took this fight on short notice, so we got to kind of mention that off the rip a little bit. So that's interesting to see. Now, typically speaking, I think out of the two, Potter probably has the better cardio. But again, taking this fight on short notice, we'll see how that works out a little bit. So that's a question mark there. But overall, as far as skill set goes, I think Potter's probably the more complete overall fighter. Potter's the type of fighter that's going to come in and look to grind. He does have some power on the feet. In my opinion, he's a little bit slow and kind of plotty, and he's a little predictable with the striking, though, at times. He reminds me kind of a mini version of Dan Kelly in some ways. He does actually have some judo, and you know, he's capable of getting some judo-type throws and takedowns in that regard. But he likes to hold you up against a cage, drop some elbows, you know, utilize those, just kind of make it a dirty, ugly fight and punish you along the way. Now, that said, Turner is the more of the athletic type of fighter, the more of the hyped prospect that really, I mean, a lot of people have been saying good things about him for a while now. He had his Contender Series debut, and, you know, that just kind of his win on the Contender Series actually elevated him to get this spot here in the UFC. And unfortunately for him, they stuck him in with Luque right away in his official UFC debut. And, I mean, that tells you something. If they think he can even compete and hang with Luque, because Luque, I think, is on obviously at the upper echelon at 170 pounds. And this, by the way, is at 155 pounds. So Turner is dropping down a weight class, the rightful weight class that he should be in the UFC here. And he's a big guy for lightweight, let's face it. So with that said, going back to the Luque fight, I mean, the UFC stuck him in deep waters right away and thought he could hang. And he was actually doing fairly well before things got kind of ugly for him in that fight as well. So you got to see some flashes there. But again, I think he just bit off more than he could chew against Luque. I think there is a lot of hype and a lot of promise with this guy for a reason. I mean, you could just see the athleticism. He's got that long range. He's got some power. He's got some speed. He definitely is a dangerous fighter on the feet. On the ground, he definitely needs to get better and continue to grow as a fighter. He's starting to improve in that area. I mean, they definitely could see the work that he's putting in, and his takedown defense is improving as well. But I think that's where Potter's going to have his biggest advantage, and that's what he's going to try to obviously pick apart as kind of grinding Turner out, taking him to deep waters a little bit, and then making this an ugly fight, probably trying to get to the ground as well. So with all that said, I think this is going to be an intriguing fight. I think Turner is still a very raw fighter and has a lot of flaws, and maybe Potter can exploit that. But realistically, I think Turner's athleticism, his speed, and his power is going to probably be a little bit too much for Potter. I think Potter's going to be a sitting duck, and he's going to absorb a lot of punishment. So with all that said, I'm leaning a little bit more towards Turner. Now, at the current betting line and price, I don't think there's any value there with Turner. I think you're just risking too much, even if it is against a guy like Potter, which again, at times I think, you know, he has shown some very solid aspects to his game, but I think in this fight he's going to be outmatched and probably outclassed here. So with all that said, though, it's a dog or pass situation still, and I'm going to lean towards Turner, though, as far as a pick.
Callan Potter, he's stepping in for Alex Gorgeous, and while I do think that Potter is actually quite a bit better than the man that Turner was originally supposed to face, he's still got an uphill battle here because, you know, the short notice takes away Potter's biggest edge, which is his conditioning. And, Potter also needs to get this fight to the floor, and Turner actually has pretty good takedown defense. So if he's stuck standing, I think it's going to be a really bad situation here for Potter. You know, Nick mentioned that, you know, he's a little, Dan Kelly-esque on the feet, and I think it might be even a little worse than that at moments. I mean, yeah, he can make things happen at times on the feet, but a lot of it, involves the fact that he's had to make, comebacks because he ate a lot of shots on the feet because his striking defense is not very good, overall. So, and he's a little stiff. So, Jalen Turner, on the other hand, this guy hits like a tank. And now that he's dropping down to his natural weight class and having a full training camp, I think that he's going to be a very, very dangerous opponent here. So unless Callan Potter can drag this fight to the floor immediately, I think it's only a matter of time until Jalen Turner connects with something and knocks his lights out. So my pick's going to be Jalen Turner. I think he does get that first UFC win, and I think the tarantula starts a little run here at 155. So my pick is going to be Turner. Now, sticking with the lightweight division, we have Lando Venata, who is 9-3-2, taking on Marcos Rosa, who is 6-4. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Venata opened -275, the comeback on Rosa +195. And right now, looking over at our sponsor, Sportsbook BetDSI, it's currently Venata at -410, the comeback on Rosa at +310. So line merge have tightened up a little bit, more action coming in Veneta's way. Not really that surprised. I mean, if you look at, on paper, looking at Rosa's record alone, I believe he's 6-4. So that's a head scratcher. I mean, the UFC doesn't typically go after fighters that have around 500 fight, you know, records or whatnot. All that often, at least. So that is kind of a head scratcher. But if you look, I mean, Rosa's resume actually has been improving. He's getting better. He's the type of fighter I think that is definitely getting more experience. He comes from a striking background. He's long for the weight class as well. He definitely has some good striking ability. I mean, he's long, like I just said. He's got accuracy. He utilizes that reach well. He's got good boxing, good kicking game to go along with it, pretty good leg kicks. And again, power and accuracy and his ability to push forward is going to make him a threat. But he does have some discrepancies, and it's definitely on the ground again. I mean, he's still very raw when it comes to his ground game. He's trying to get better. He's trying to improve that. But I mean, as far as being a complete mixed martial artist, I think Rosa still has a long way to go. So he's going to need to stuff takedowns here, and he's going to need to kind of land when he can and take advantage of Venata's lack of strike defense at times and the punishment that he tends to absorb. We all know what kind of fighter Venata is. He's one of the most exciting fighters on the UFC roster. Let's face it. Every time he's in the octagon, I mean, the guy's in a barn burner. He's in some type of war, and it seems like he kind of competes to the level of his opponent at times as well. In most cases, he starts off and obviously he likes to stand and bang, and he does a good job of it because, man, the attack and arsenal that Venata throws at you, I mean, just the number of different angles and weapons that he has at his disposal is pretty fun to watch, and he's effective using them. So Veneta's a very dangerous fighter, but he's more complete in the aspect that he can get the fight to the ground. He's a very solid wrestler. He's got a good jiu-jitsu game to go along with it as well. So he's just a more complete fighter, and it's been kind of a rough sledding so far for Venata. I mean, it's kind of sad because with all the hype that he had coming into the UFC, I mean, he, for crying out loud, he ended up, of course, we say it almost every podcast, but when we're talking about him, but Venata ended up making his UFC debut against Ferguson and almost beat Ferguson in that debut. So that put him on the map right away. A lot of people respected him. But since then, I mean, the level of competition that he's faced has been top notch, and he's had a lot of tough decisions and close decisions that could have went either way as well. So that's kind of the type of fighter he is. I mean, he lays it all on the line. But in this matchup, I think he's actually kind of taking a step down. I'm not saying Rose is going to be an easy guy to handle on the feet, but I think as far as overall skill set goes, this is definitely one of the weaker opponents that Vanetta's had to face. So it's hard not to like him here in this fight. I mean, I think if he's going to be not very bright and just want to stand and bang with Rosa, then he could be in some trouble because, again, I think he eats a lot of punishment. But outside of that, if he utilizes his overall skill, this should be a fairly easy path to victory for him. Like I said, using his mixed martial arts, complete game, getting some takedowns and trying to expose Rosa on the ground. I think that's probably his best path to victory. So the pick is Vanetta. I do agree with the line movement kind of going up that way a little bit as well. We'll see what Rosa has to offer. I mean, if Rosa does pull off this upset win, then obviously he's been working on that takedown defense and working on their ground game. So we'll see how it plays out. But my pick and my lean is Vanetta in this fight.
Yeah, I think this is a pretty simple fight to break down. You know, Rosa is the type of fighter that is dangerous on the feet. I mean, he doesn't just look – I mean, doesn't just fight like him. He looks like Anderson Silva and a lightweight version of him. And, you know, nickname is Dollism, I believe, like a guy from Street Fighter. So, if Vanetta wants to win this fight, the thing he should absolutely not do is just screw around in the stand-up, which unfortunately is where he usually likes to fight. Vanetta's a very aggressive, unorthodox striker, throwing a lot of spinning stuff. I mean, he has one of the best wins. His one win in the UFC is, a wild spinning back fist that connected and ended up getting a performance of the night bonus. So he's a very entertaining fighter, but, if he can just improve that fight IQ a little bit, I think he can take this fight to the floor and he should be able to make quick work of Rosa on the ground. Rosa really hasn't shown that much on the canvas at all. I've seen, you know, scouting reports say that his ground game's pretty much non-existent. So, you know, if Vanetta wants to win this fight, don't just stand and bang with this guy. That's a guy that's going to be, you know, bigger than you, longer than you, just as good of a striker as you, if not better. Just take it to the floor. It's not a kickboxing match. It's MMA, and either get this TKO on the canvas or submit this guy and then move on and continue your UFC career. So I'm going to pick Lando Vanetta. I think that he is intelligent enough to make that decision. But if he does screw around on the feet, he might get burnt. But overall, my pick is still going to be Vanetta. Now, moving on to the ESPN preliminary card, we have a bantamweight contest between Teruto Ishihara, who is 11-5-2, and Kyung-ho Kang, who is 14-8 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Kang opened -305 to come back, and Ishihara +225. Right now, over at BetDSI, we are seeing Kang coming in at -360 to come back, and Ishihara at +270. So line margins have tightened up again. A little bit more action coming in Kang's way. I don't blame you guys out there for coming in on Kang early on. I mean, what we've seen from both guys thus far in their UFC's careers, I mean, it's pretty obvious what the blueprint is here for Kang and what the blueprint is here for Ishihara. Ishihara is a dangerous striker. The guy has a ton of power on the feet. He's got some speed. He's got that kind of wild aggressiveness that is effective at times as well. He's got some decent experience, but he's lost, I believe, 4 out of his last 5 fights. All to solid competition, of course, as well. But Ishihara at one point was a pretty promising prospect in his own right. So he's in quite a bit of a slump here, and he needs to get a win. And the UFC are not doing him any favors matching him up with Kang, because I think Kang is one of my favorite prospects coming out of that region for a long time. And, you know, it's a shame. He had some time off, obviously. He had some military duties or whatnot. But since he's come back, he's back and looking good overall. And his path to victory in most cases is kind of grinding his opponents out, and he does a great job at doing so. I mean, he's the type of fighter that – I think probably is a little bit underrated on the feet. He's long. He's got some skill with his kicks. He's got some good boxing as well. But more so than not, I think it's his grinding style again, getting the takedowns, working his ground game. He's got some good grappling, underrated grappling skills. I mean, his transitions and everything, every aspect of his game on the ground is fun to watch. And he's a smart fighter as well. So he's got some good fight IQ. I think for here in this matchup, obviously the fight's going to start on the feet. I think Kang could do fairly well with Ishihara, even standing up. But I think as far as defensively goes, I think his defense I don't trust as much. And he kind of has that tall man defense a little bit. And Ishihara has enough power that I would definitely think that Kang realizes that, and his path to victory again is getting this fight to the floor and just grinding Ishihara out or looking for a finish on the ground as well. So I think the blueprint again is clear. If Kang is not able to do that and this fight stays standing, the longer it stays standing, I think Ishihara is going to have his spot on the feet to possibly pull off the upset win. So he does have a puncher's chance here in this fight, no doubt about it. It all depends on if Ishihara's takedown defense has improved enough to get to the point where he can keep this fight upright and just kind of, you know, uses wrestling in reverse, as we like to say. So Ishihara by KO or Kang grinding him out and probably finishing him on the ground, I'm going to go obviously with Kang. I mean, I just think that, again, he's a very solid fighter. He keeps on improving, and I'd like to see him kind of continue his solid run. I know he had a setback a little bit against Ramos in his last fight, but before that, I mean, he pulled off several good wins, quality wins, and I think he gets back on track here against Ishihara. So the pick is Kang. I think there's a good chance he finishes as the fight goes, but if not, he'll win on the scorecards as well.
Yeah, it's been a rough run for Ishihara. He's lost 4 of his last 5 fights. And then he dropped down to bantamweight 2 fights ago and then has lost both bantamweight fights even against Quinones. And most recently, he got knocked out by Peter Yan last June. So it's definitely just been a tough stretch here for Ishihara, and it's not getting any easier because Kyungho Kang, before he left to go do his military service, I had him as a top 15 UFC bantamweight at the time. And then he left, he finally returned, and he's looked really good so far. You know, he came back, he got the triangle choke victory in his return fight against Kennedy, and then a very competitive fight against Ricardo Ramos could have gone his way as an underdog. And then now he's facing Ishihara, and what this boils down to is, you know, Kang's never been a great striker, but he's always been a very physical and talented grappler. And I think that he drags this fight to the floor. Kang's bigger. He's stronger than Ishihara. The only thing that he doesn't have is the knockout power of Ishihara. And as Nick mentioned, you know, either Ishihara knocks him out or he's probably going to lose on the ground. And I think the likelihood of Ishihara catching Kang coming in is just so slim. Kang does a really good job of, you know, getting in on his opponents, coming in at their legs, getting them on the canvas, and then forcing them into a grappling fight. And I just don't think this goes well for Ishihara. We've already seen him in bad grappling situations. You know, Gray Maynard took him down repeatedly. In one of Ishihara's last flyweight or featherweight contests. And I think this time around, Kang just completely sticks to Ishihara like glue, takes away Ishihara's power, and either submits him or TKOs him or potentially grinds him out and wins a decision. I think Kang can win any way he wants as long as he keeps getting this fight to the floor. And Ishihara has a puncher's chance for about 15 to 20 seconds each round. So my pick is definitely going to be Kyungho Kang. I think he definitely gets the job done on the canvas. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Kai Kara France, who is 18-7, taking on Rulin Paiva, who is 18-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
France open -245, the comeback on Paiva at +175. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we see France at -230, the comeback on Paiva's at +190. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two-way action coming in on this fight. More public action coming in France's way, and there's been some reports of sharp action coming in on Paiva as the underdog here as well. So we're going to continue to, I think, see some two-way action in this fight as well. I mean, I understand why more of the public action coming in on France. I think that he is the more popular fighter, obviously a UFC tough veteran. I mean, he's performed relatively well. He did on that show, and then outside of the show, he performed relatively well over some solid competition. I mean, he's just been kind of in the spotlight. He's only 25 years old, but you could see he's got a ton of experience over quality competition. And again, he's been a hyped prospect for a little bit of time now as well. So I'm glad to see him in the UFC, and I'm glad to see him get a win under his belt. I mean, his debut win over Garcia was pretty impressive. France is a very good striker. He's got clean technique. He's a little spark plug, man. I mean, he's quick. He's powerful. He's fun to watch. He's getting a better ground game. He's a very solid and complete fighter overall. So a lot of good things to like. I think he's entering the UFC just at the right time, where his confidence is kind of getting where it needs to be. His skill set's improving to the point where it needs to be. He's got good training partners. I mean, I believe he was training with Adesanya and crew. So he's got a lot of good things going for him. But he has a tough opponent in Pava here. I think, you know, this is the type of opponent that a lot of people are underestimate. He was a winner of the Brazilian tough or contender series, I should say. He won his fight on the contender series over a solid veteran there as well. And if you look at his resume, I mean, from top to bottom, I mean, it's not the can crusher resume that you typically see from Brazilian fighters with an 18-1 type of record. He has some okay wins on that resume a little bit. And again, he's been tested. You could definitely see from some of the footage out there that the guy is a very complete fighter. He's dangerous on the feet. He's long. He's aggressive. He's got that killer instinct. He's a well-rounded fighter as well. I mean, I think his best attribute is probably looking to take the fight to the floor and working his submissions. But on the feet, I mean, he's not shy to throw those bombs as well. I mean, he looks for, again, he utilizes that length, and he knows he's got some power in the feet. He pushes forward and looks for that KO too. So there's a lot to like about Pava. So I think this is going to be a very exciting fight. Everywhere it takes place, it'll be back and forth a little bit. I'm leaning a little bit more towards France because I think he's just a little bit of the cleaner, the more – I think well put together at this point, fighter. I think he's a more proven fighter at this point as well, but Pava's going to have some size on him. And again, Pava's a dangerous fighter. So this is a situation, I think, where it could very well be a dog or pass situation. I'm going to pick France to slightly have an edge in this fight. Again, I think he's just been a little bit more battle tested, and I like the improvements I'm seeing from him. So I think he's just a step ahead of Pava right now. But again, at the betting window, I would not lay over 2.5 to 1. So I think it is kind of a dog or pass situation in this spot here. But my overall pick, I think, is going to be a little bit more towards France. So I'm expecting an exciting fight, and I don't think this will fail, man. I think this has fireworks written all over it, and it should deliver. So the pick is France to win a pretty fun fight here.
Yeah, I think this fight should be a lot of fun. I expect it to take place primarily on the feet. I think, Paiva, this guy's been through a lot. After he won his Tuesday Night Contender Series fight, a close split decision over Nascimento. He got in a really bad car accident. I think he was riding his motorcycle with his girlfriend, and she ended up going into a coma and dying. I mean, that's just – he's been through a ton just since earning his way to the UFC. So, this is his first fight since all that happened. So, you got to wonder where he's at right now heading into this. Car of France, this guy, he's a little bit more proven. He had his fights on The Ultimate Fighter. He's won already inside the octagon. I think Car of France is a bit of a cleaner overall striker. I think he has very good technique. Paiva is a little bit more aggressive and wild. And I think that, he's a guy, like a fighter that's going to be running a lot on emotion. Where France, I think, will be a little bit more down to earth and in the fight. So, I think wherever this fight goes, France should have the edge, in terms of technique and, just solid veteran ability. Now Paiva, he has that great record, but a lot of it's padded with some, not so great Brazilian fighters, but he has impressed more recently with a few decent wins. But I just think Car of France is going to be too much for him. I mean, the only real thing Paiva has here is his aggression and the fact that he's a little bit bigger and longer than France. But I think France makes up for that with technique, and technique is going to win the day here for Car of France. So my pick is going to be Kai Car of France. I think he takes advantage of the holes in Paiva's striking defense more than anything. Now, moving on, we have a featherweight contest between Shane Young, who is 11-4, and Austin Arnett, who is 16-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Young Open minus 275, Arnett plus 195. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing Young at minus 320, the comeback on Arnett at plus 245. So Young got bet up a little bit. And again, another spot where there is going to be two action coming into this fight a little bit as well, but more action coming in, slightly more coming in Young's way. Another spot I don't, you know, fault the people for laying that chocolate coming in Young's way. Young is a pretty impressive fighter. I realize that he didn't have a successful UFC debut, but he did come in taking it on short notice. And I mean, he obviously showed us a lot in that fight as well. I mean, losing to Volkanovski and now Volkanovski going out there and beating Mendez like he did, not necessarily a bad loss. I mean, you know, coming in short notice, stepping up against a beast like that, you can understand it. And then, but he followed it up with a very impressive win over Rolando D, which D, honestly, I know this is going to sound crazy to a lot of people. I think he's a little bit underrated. So that's not quite an easy win as everybody thinks. A lot of people think D's probably the biggest can on the roster, or was on the roster, or whatnot. But again, I give Young a little bit of respect for going out there finishing D like he did. So D's a pretty tough guy. He's not an easy guy to finish. So Young is another one of these fighters, just like France. He trains with France as well. And Adesanya, again, part of this group that's kind of been training together a little bit and kind of, you know, iron sharpening iron type of situation, mentally, physically. These guys are all helping each other out. They're all getting better, and they're all got confidence right now brimming. And you could see it, you know, when they're going out there fighting. And Young's 25 years old as well, so he's got a ton of upside and a lot of things, a lot of similarities that I was just saying about France. I mean, you could say about about Young as well. I mean, he's got some power on the feet. He's an aggressive fighter. He's got a good ground game. He's strong for age 25. I think, you know, I think he's probably stronger than most people could imagine at this point of his career. So I think, again, the potential is unlimited for a guy like Young. I think he's got more upside even than when we were talking about with France here a little bit ago as well. So I like what I see with Young. I think he's going to push a high pace. He's got some power, like I said. He could dictate where the fight goes. Arnett, on the other hand, is a little bit underrated, and he's the type of fighter that always brings it, pushes a very high pace. He's tough as nails. He's hard to get out of there. And he's got such a well-rounded skill set that kind of he's a little bit unorthodox, and with that length that he throws at you as well, he's just not an easy out. I mean, he makes life miserable for most fighters, but I think this will be a fairly competitive fight. It'll go back and forth because Arnett's going to bring it. He's going to land his shots. He's going to have his moments in his fight as well. Again, he's an experienced fighter, and it's a good test for a fighter like Young. I like this match for both fighters because if Arnett is able to pull off this upset, you know, that's a solid win for Arnett, and it's going to continue to do him good, and his confidence is going to prove, and he'll be heading in the right direction. But a lot can be said for Young as well. I think to me, at least in my opinion, a lot of people might not respect Arnett that much, but I think he's a very solid fighter. And if Young goes out there and looks good and gets the W here against Arnett, I think he's definitely on the right path and he's doing some good things. So I expect another barn burner, and I think it's going to be another competitive type of fight, but I think Young's going to pull away, and it's going to be his power that's going to make the difference. I think we're going to see a lot of competitive exchanges, but I think it's going to be Young doing more damage along the way, and it's going to be evident as the fight progresses on the judges' scorecards as well. So I don't see Young losing on the scorecards, even if it is a pretty competitive decision. So my pick is Young. Now, as far as a bet goes, I'm not going to say it's, in my opinion, it's as kind of as dangerous as France. I think Paiva France is going to be a little bit closer and a little bit more dangerous as far as if you're going to lay chalk, I would probably consider Young a little bit more. But again, at this point where the line is now, I think you stay away from it and just kind of watch and enjoy and see how these guys continue to improve. So my pick is Young. Tempted to maybe, you know, put him in a parlay, lay some chalk on him a little bit as well, especially if the line drops a little bit. But at this point where the line is now, I'd just probably stay away from it. So not a dog or pass situation, although I do have a lot of respect for Arnett, but I do think Young gets it done here in this spot, and I'm looking forward to this fight as well.
Yeah, both of these guys lost their UFC debuts, but they're coming off of wins. And I think, you know, Shane Young, Austin Arnett, they're both talented featherweights, but I think Shane Young just has a little bit more to offer. He's more of a finisher. I think that he's more of the complete fighter, while Arnett is the type of guy that gets into entertaining scraps, but he's more looking to just outwork his opponent, outpoint his opponent. With Young, you're looking at a guy that's trying to put his opponent away to win convincingly, whether on the scorecards or just by stoppage. I think Young mixes things up a little bit better with both the ground game and especially using all his limbs on the feet. Had a beautiful elbow in his stoppage victory. So I think when Young takes on Arnett, it's going to be a battle of one guy that's trying everything he can to not just win the fight, but to put his opponent away against somebody that I think is trying to just outpoint or outwork and outlast his opponent in Arnett. So, you know, this is kind of the battle of two styles. And I just think Shane Young is going to have the more entertaining style. He's going to be fighting in front of the home crowd. He's going to have them with him. And I think Young can win this fight, even if it does go to decision. But I think there's also a possibility that while Arnett is tough as nails, there's a decent chance that Young might be able to put him away as well. So I'm going to side with Shane Young. I think he gets the job done. Now, moving on to the lightweight headliner, we have Devontae Smith, who is 9-1, taking on Donghyun Ma, formerly Donghyun Maestro Kim, who is 16-8-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Smith, open minus 230. Kim slash Ma, open plus 170. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we're currently seeing Smith at minus 250. The comeback on Kim at plus 200. So excuse me, pardon me. I'm going to probably continue to call him Kim. One of those situations where everybody calls the San Diego Chargers. The San Diego Chargers still win. In fact, they are the LA Chargers. So I'll be kind of comparing it to that sort of perspective there. So that said, this is an exciting fight, man. I mean, both these guys love to stand and bang. Both these guys are finishers. Both present a lot of problems for each other as well. And this is by far the best and biggest test of Smith's career, in my opinion. So a lot to like. And, man, Smith is just – talking about an explosive athlete. I mean, there's a lot to like about Smith thus far. And, I mean, you know, again, he had that kind of hype around him that a lot of people were saying, hey, this guy – he's an explosive athlete. He goes out there and knocks people out. You know, he's training obviously at Factory X with a great crew right now. He's originally from Ohio. He had some good training there as well, but he's been just stepping up his game to the point where, again, confidence, training partners, iron sharpens iron type of situation there, training with Kamosi and crew. And again, all the people, that are involved with Factory X and all those great training partners. I mean, this guy, you could just see it, you know, fight by fight, even confidence mentally, everything's getting better for Smith. And what you get from him is just, like I said, an explosive athlete, has good takedown defense, developing his ground game, and that's the worst part of his game as well right now would be that ground game. I mean, again, the takedown defense is holding up enough that I think that in most cases it should do him just fine. And, you know, obviously if he keeps it up on the feet, he's going to have an advantage over most fighters because, man, he's just got that raw power and, again, pretty clean technique. It's not like he's a sloppy fighter going out there just winging punches. I mean, again, he continues to improve, so a lot to like about Smith. But he does have some flaws, and I mentioned his ground game. In fact, that's one flaw that everybody keeps on pointing out, like that Gunther loss that's on his resume back in, I believe, well, not too long ago, in 2017, he ended up getting mounted in round three by John Gunther, and getting finished. The referee stopped the fight because Gunther was kind of laying it on there. So that's kind of a head scratcher, and you don't expect, if you see a legit young prospect, you don't expect him to lose to Gunther. You know, all due respect to Gunther, but you know what I'm saying. It's just Gunther is not going to be a potential title challenger one day, where in the likes of Devontae Smith, if you take that loss off his resume and just look at it, his body work so far and the ability to finish fights. I mean, look at the Erosa win that he just had. Julian Erosa is a very good fighter. The UFC brought him back, deservingly so, to get a shot at the UFC. I mean, Erosa can win plenty of fights on the UFC roster, in my opinion. And Smith just went out there and destroyed him in a round. So that's what he's capable of doing. But again, I think it's his toughest test because Kim presents a lot of problems here. Erosa, like I said, very good fighter. A lot of respect. That was the best win Smith had to date. But this is a different type of fighter in Kim, where Kim presents a lot of problems. He does hit hard on the feet as well. He's a warrior. He's been in there with a lot of good fighters. He's got a good ground game, though. I think Kim has the ability to mix in some judo-type takedowns, some trip takedowns, and utilize some of that ground game. And he's got to have a little bit of size over Smith as well. And again, if he has to stand and bang with Smith on the feet, not that he's going to choose to do so a lot, but I mean, he's capable of maybe landing that hard knockout type of punch as well and delivering some punishment back at Smith. So this should be an exciting fight everywhere it takes place again. And I think that Kim does present a lot of problems to Smith. But with all that said, from what I've seen from Smith and his improvement, again, all the training partners and everything, that the work that he's putting in, I think that he could probably come out of there early on in this fight as well. If he gets in deeper waters, I think you got to kind of favor Kim as the fight progresses a little, because he might be able to utilize that ground and get the fight to the floor then as it progresses a little bit and give Smith some problems there. So it's going to be an interesting fight. It's not going to be an easy fight, but I do think that Smith probably gets it done here against Kim as well. So the pick is Smith at the current price and line right now. It's another tough one, 2.5 to 1. I mean, like I said, I like what I've seen from Smith so far, but I want to see Kim come in here, test him, try to get some takedowns, try to make this a miserable, ugly type of fight for Smith before I'm willing to lay 2.5 to 1 on a solid fighter, solid competition yet over Smith. So the pick is Smith. Let's see how he does here, but I hope he delivers, because, man, this guy is definitely an exciting prospect. And I think, again, sky's the limit for him at 155 pounds. If he could keep the fight upright and he continues to grow as a fighter, man. I mean, let's see what the future holds for him. The pick is Smith, probably by knockout.
Yeah, the UFC really threw Smith to the wolves in that UFC debut at welterweight, so up a weight class, and not just up a weight class, but taking on a top 15 fighter, in my opinion, in Vicente Luque. So that was a bit unfair to Smith. I mean, he could have pulled it off if he'd have been able to land that big bomb, but he didn't, and then Luque, you know, eventually put him away. So now that he's dropping down to 155, though, Smith is going to be an absolute powerhouse. I mean, this guy has excellent takedown defense. He has just elite power and striking ability at the 155-pound level. And against most fighters, he probably will be able to just put them away if he can connect with anything solid. Dong-Hyung Maestro Kim here, Dong-Hyung Ma, on the feet, he's just not that impressive. He's slugged it out with people, and he's had some entertaining fights that were primarily based on the stand-up, but, they weren't exactly against world beaters, and he still ended up on the losing end of those. So, you know, taking on a guy that has just ferocious knockout power, it's just not a good idea if you're Dong-Hyung Kim here. To stand and bang with this guy for even a minute. So if Kim's going to win this fight, he's going to have to utilize his ground game. And that's what he's been doing lately. He's been on a bit of a run with a few nice wins, and it's come by taking fights to the ground and working his submission and top control and ground and pound. And if he's able to do that against Smith, more power to him, but I just don't think he's going to be able to actually put Smith on his back and keep him there. I think Smith, his takedown defense is too strong. He's going to be too athletic and quick for Kim to easily get hold of. And I think Smith will just be darting in and out and connecting with just bombs. And I just don't think Kim is going to have an answer when the big shots start coming. So as soon as Smith gets comfortable, I think this fight will be over. That could happen in the first round. It could happen in the third round. But I think it does happen at some point, and my pick is going to be Devontae Smith. Now, moving on to the pay-per-view main card in the light heavyweight division, we have Jimmy Crute, who is 9-0, taking on Sam Alvey, who is 33-10 with 1-0 contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Crute opened -245. The comeback on Alvey +175. That's not a mistake. That was the opener there. So Crute -245, +175 on Alvey. Looking over at BetDSI, currently the price is Crute -140. The comeback +110 on Alvey as well. So those of you guys that gobbled up +175 on Alvey, wow, good take, good grab. I mean, Alvey definitely has a chance to win his fight, but that said, he is taking this fight on short notice. I know he was training for a fight coming up as well, so I don't think his cardio is going to be that big of an issue. And again, this fight is at 205, and we're used to Alvey kind of bouncing back and forth between 185 and 205, but he's fought the last few at 205, so let's see how he continues to do here. This is an interesting spot because I think there's a lot to like about Crute, another prospect that has been getting some attention and had a successful debut win. And I mean, from the Contender Series win and then the original or the official UFC debut win, you could see a lot of good things about Crute, but you could also see some flaws and that bother me and kind of stand out a little bit. And one being, I think, his strike defense. I mean, the guy definitely is a very talented fighter, a well put together fighter. I mean, offensively, his boxing, again, big power in both hands. I mean, the guy can mix things up. He digs the body. Again, he has good clinch work. He's got good kicking game to go along with it. The guy has a really solid ground game. He's got good wrestling to go along with it as well. Solid just everywhere. I mean, he continues again to be a 22-year-old that has a lot of experience for his age and a lot of skill, well-rounded skill, but he's facing, I think, one of the toughest fights he's ever had in his spot against Alvey, even though he is a replacement fighter. And the problem with Crude is he's got that defense that kind of lets him down. I mean, he's just wide open. He's very hittable. So offensively, he could dish it out, but defensively, he can take it. He's absorbed it. I give him that, but he gets marked up and punishment does get through. And I guess Alvey, he's got that kind of sneaky knockout power that you don't expect. If you look at Alvey, you don't think he's much of a threat, but man, I mean, talk to some of his opponents that he's just destroyed. I mean, just landing that one punch and you just, you know, spot on and just them crumbling. So that's the kind of one punch knockout power Alvey possesses. I know he's coming off of a knockout loss against Nogueira. So, I mean, that kind of was a bit of a surprise. I mean, especially Nogueira showed that he had some left in the tank. Obviously, we're all kind of writing him off a little bit there. But that said, against Crute, we'll see how he rebounds here, because again, Crute's going to be another dangerous type of fighter, because offensively he's a threat in all areas. But we know Alvey has good takedown defense. He uses that wrestling and reverse, able to keep the fight upright most of the times. He's patient. He waits for his spots and then he delivers. So this is going to be a very tough fight to call. Honestly, I could see it going either way. I've been bouncing back and forth on this myself. I mean, I think it's more of a matchup that the UFC would like to push Crute forward more so than not. So hopefully his defense will hold up here in this spot. I am worried and concerned about that because, again, I don't like it, especially with the power that Alvey has. And I'm saying all that because I'm going to slightly lean towards Crute in this fight. So, again, with the opening line, there's no way I would lay over 2-1 on Crute. Where the line is now, still, it's tough to bet 140, I think, on Crute at this spot as well, because I think, in my opinion, this is going to be the hardest test of his career. And again, Alvey has faced a ton of solid competition. So even though Crute is definitely a dangerous man to face, I mean, Alvey's pretty much faced the best of the best out there throughout his career. So he's faced a lot of good competition. So this is not going to be a huge step forward for Alvey, but this is going to be for Crute. So a lot of question marks surrounding this fight. With all that said, I'm slightly leaning towards Crute. I hope it's an exciting fight. And I also hope that we see, you know, Crute kind of step up his game and not get out there, go out there and get destroyed by Alvey. Cause I would like to see another prospect at 205, a solid prospect. And if Crute goes out there and gets a W over Alvey, he might just be that. So let's see how it plays out. Again, Crute is the pick and hopefully it's an exciting fight.
Yeah. What this fight really boils down to is Crute going to be too raw and too aggressive for his own good? Because, you know, this is a kid that can put himself in some bad positions just because he's so eager to go out there and make something happen. So he could walk right into a big bomb from Sam Alvey, could get himself knocked out, could make a bad mistake and find himself on his back against Alvey and lose a round or something. So those are the main things I'm worried about with Crute, because overall, I mean, he is just a little bit, I mean, they're about the same size height wise, but Crute's a little bit more filled out. He's a little bit stronger, I think, than Alvey. You know, this is a guy that in Crute, he's been fighting at this weight class, his whole life, while Alvey was at one point fighting at 170. So he's kind of pulling the Anthony Johnson path here, Sam Alvey is. But, yeah, I think this is a pretty decent matchup for Crute, because he has that athleticism, he has that explosion, the power. I think that Crute has a slight edge if it goes to the ground as well. You know, Alvey's a veteran, but he's kind of known as that guy that just doesn't really pull the trigger and have a big output. So it makes it tough for him to win rounds, even if he's the one walking forward. So unless Alvey really steps up the aggression, I just don't think he can match Jimmy Crute's pace and his own aggression. Unless Alvey lands that big shot, I think this is Jimmy Crute's fight to lose. I think that he can outwork Alvey. I think that he might be able to put Alvey away. We'll see if he can do that. That's definitely a tall task. But, yeah, I think Jimmy Crute, you know, as young and raw as he is, I think that this is a favorable matchup, and I think that he might be able to just out-aggress Sam Alvey. And unless Alvey, you know, really fights a little bit differently than he has been fighting, I think Jimmy Crute gets the job done. So Crute is going to be my pick. Now, moving on to the women's flyweight division, we have Montana De La Rosa, who is 9-4, taking on Nadia Kassem, who is 5-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
This fight opened a pick exactly minus 120 either way. Minus 120 De La Rosa, minus 120 Kassem. And right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is minus 250 for De La Rosa. Actually, minus 255 for De La Rosa. The comeback plus 205 on Kassem. So line margins have tightened up a little bit and tons of action coming in De La Rosa's way. This line opened a pick them. That's a head scratcher alone. I mean, if you're just watching and just checking out Kassem on footage and what she's accomplished so far, even her UFC debut, it is a mismatch. There's no way it should kind of open a paper on paper at a pick'em, I should say. That said, I do see some potential from Kassem. I mean, she has some okay stand-up skill. That's kind of what she's more known for than anything else. But she has shown us some ground skill as well. I mean, her ground game, she got out-wrestled by Alex Chambers, so that's a little concern there for Kassem backers. But that said, at least off her back, she was able to throw up triangle submissions, armbar submissions, and she didn't look like a fish out of water underground. So Kassem definitely is a very complete fighter, but still developing, and she's raw because she just hasn't faced that high level competition to kind of test the waters at. So she's faced a lot of bums, and that's how she got, you know, four KOTKO wins or whatnot in one decision. I mean, she's beaten a bunch of low level fighters. Chambers was by far her best win, and a lot of people consider Chambers probably one of the weakest fighters on the UFC roster, especially for the female fighters. So that tells you it is what it is. Now, De La Rosa, on the other hand, she's shown us a lot of good stuff. I mean, she was an Ultimate Fighter competitor, of course, so she kind of made her mark on that show. She's had some success so far in the octagon as well, and you could see the ability that she has. Her husband, obviously, is a UFC fighter, and I mean, I'm mentioning that because obviously when you have a spouse situation, I mean, if you're husband and wife and you're competing at the highest level, you're definitely going to help each other out, and you're definitely going to pick up some pointers. I mean, you know, back and forth. I know a lot of people are you know, saying that she's going to probably get a little bit more from it because, I mean, let's face it, if she's going to have to compete against her husband and compete at that level every day, a lot of these ladies are going to be a little bit easier when she goes in the octagon against them. So what I'm saying is De La Rosa is a level above Kassem here in all areas. If this turns into a stand-up fight, which should be Kassem's in her favor a little bit, I think De La Rosa can actually put it on her there as well. It'll be back and forth. I think these ladies can do some damage. What I don't like to see in Kassem so far is sometimes when she gets hit, she does kind of turn away and hesitate a little bit. And you can tell she doesn't like absorbing those punches when she's getting tagged. She can deliver them offensively, but that's something to be seen and kind of keep an eye out for as well. Where De La Rosa kind of absorbs them a little better, she'll take them. She'll come forward a little bit more as well. So I think anywhere this fight takes place, De La Rosa will be okay. It might be a little competitive at times, but eventually De La Rosa probably gets a takedown. And on the ground, I think, is where she's going to do the most damage. She probably gets a finish either by ground and pound or by submission over Kassem. So I just think that Kassem's outmatched here in this spot. I don't see how she gets it done. I mean, she's going to probably have to catch De La Rosa on the ground by one of those triangles, by one of those arm bars that she was not able to catch Chambers with in her UFC debut. And I think that's going to be a tough task against De La Rosa. So just outclassed here for Kassem. I mean, she is, again, the hometown fighter. So I know the UFC, you know, would like to probably see her do okay, but they're not doing her any favors matching her up with De La Rosa here. So I think De La Rosa gets the job done, and she probably finishes it. So the pick, De La Rosa, probably by submission inside the distance.
Yeah, Montana De La Rosa, I just think she is significantly better than Nadia Kassem. I mean, Kassem is on the rise, at least, as a young, talented, undefeated fighter at just 23 years old, but as she showed in that UFC debut where she was trying to fight at 115 pounds and came in heavy, and ended up winning a decision over Alex Chambers. I just don't think she's ready for, a top 15 opponent like Montana De La Rosa. Kassem is just too raw. I mean, she's got some power, she's got some ability, but, not being able to finish somebody like Alex Chambers speaks volumes. And now to be moving up a weight class where the girls are going to be a little bit bigger and a little bit stronger, I think this is not going to end well for Qasem. I mean, she's just not as talented as De La Rosa. De La Rosa has been putting people away so far in her run at 125 pounds, whether it was on the Ultimate Fighter show and also just in general, since the show and in the UFC. I mean, she has picked up three straight submissions. The most recent one, obviously, against Rachel Ostovich. She looked great, picked up a rear naked choke. So I think Montana De La Rosa continues those winning submission ways. That's primarily her bread and butter. She's got seven submissions out of her nine career victories. And I think that she gets another submission here if she is able to drag this fight floor and get the job done. So my pick is going to be Montana De La Rosa. Now, moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Hani Yahya, who is 26-9 with one no contest, taking on Ricky Simone, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Yahya opened minus 175, the comeback on Simone at plus 135. And right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Yahya minus 120, the comeback on Simone at minus 110. So Simone was a favorite as well. Line flip. Now it's flipping back. It's basically a pick-em type of fight, obviously. And it's an intriguing fight. I mean, in my opinion, Yahya's been one of the best, obviously, at 135 pounds for a long time. Underrated. I mean, just a veteran going back to Japan. I mean, he's been around a block and back. 34 years old, fought who's who that he was able to in his weight categories. So, I mean, the guy is just kind of a legend in the sport. And with that being said, he's a legend because his ground game is superb. I mean, the guy is just a whiz on the ground. He's got underrated, unrespected, underappreciated wrestling. I mean, and his ground game, like I said, is just phenomenal. Once he gets his ground game rolling, once he gets position on you, you're in some serious trouble. You'll be lucky to survive against this guy. So that's his path to victory in most cases. I mean, he's improved his stand-up through the years a little bit, but that's not his bread and butter, obviously. I mean, he uses that sometimes to set up his takedowns and get inside, obviously, take your back or whatnot and work his magic. And that's what he's going to look to do here against Simone as well. But Simone is the young gun here, 26 years old, a very well-rounded fighter. So far, I mean, he's looked phenomenal in the UFC. The UFC hasn't done him any favors. I mean, let's face it. He's been matched up with a lot of, you know, tough competition. You can't compare resumes again, even though Simone's fought a lot of solid competition. I mean, I was just saying how Yahya's fought who's who. So across the board, I mean, Yahya has him trumped in resumes for sure. But that being said, I mean, if you look at Montel Jackson, what he did recently in his getting that impressive win that he did, I mean, Simone got a win over Jackson in Jackson's UFC debut. That was not an easy win. Devashvili, not too long ago as well, against Mareb, he got that W there. That was a very tough fight. But before that, if you look at his wins in LFA, he fought, obviously, Chico Camus, a veteran of the UFC, which I thought should never got cut from the roster, honestly. He was good enough to definitely stay on there, Camus was. So he ended up getting a W over Camus. So on the Contender Series, he got a W over Freelo as well. So this guy is just a very solid, very complete fighter that's getting better and is dangerous in all aspects of the game. I mean, if you watch his striking and the way he goes about it, technical skill, just picking his spots. I mean, again, going for the body, mixing things up, switching stances. This guy is just speed, power, precision, everything about him on the feet you love. And then his wrestling to boot is top notch as well. I mean, it's going to get him far in the division. Now, in that aspect of things, he doesn't want to really fiddle around with it. Again, it's another spot where you want to use your wrestling in reverse against Yahya. So he's going to have to keep his distance. He's going to have to keep that space. He's going to have to keep Yahya off him if he's going to want to win his fight. And it's not going to be an easy task to do. I mean, one mistake against a guy like Yahya and the fight's over. But I think Simone is the type of fighter that is smart enough and is well-rounded enough, and his ability even on the ground is good enough to probably get him out of trouble in a quick scramble, get him back to a safe position, and then start utilizing his stand-up and all the other tools that he has in his arsenal that are going to trump Yahya in this spot. So really the only spot that Yahya has him in is probably the ground, obviously. I mean, that's pretty evident. Outside of that, if Simone does not get caught up in Yahya's trap on the ground, I think he wins it. He wins it on the scorecards. I think Simone could even stop Yahya on the feet. You know, Yahya's a very tough guy, not an easy guy to finish, but I think with Simone's speed and power and his variety of strikes, I think he can land something along the way while Yahya's trying to close the gap and probably finish him there as well. So outside of that, I think if it hits the scorecards, Simone probably wins on the scorecards. He has a shot to finish this fight as well standing. Whereas Yahya, I mean, obviously if he gets some takedowns along the way, he could win on the scorecards, but I think more so than not, if he wins this fight, it's going to be by submission. So if you really do like Yahya, I would recommend looking for a sub prop. You're going to get a better price. And I think that's how he wins if he does win. If not, I think Simone could win on the scorecards or again get the finish. So I'm going to pick Simone here. I think that he takes that step. I mean, this is kind of one of those matchups, I think, again, by the UFC, which is matching a rising prospect, a rising future title contender in Simone against a solid, respectable veteran like Yahya. And I think the prospect is ready to take that next step. So the pick is Simone to get an impressive win over Yahya.
Yeah, the one thing that Yahya has going for him throughout his career is one of the better ground games in the UFC. And it's been on full display during his recent run in the organization. You know, going back to his WEC days, you know, he was so one-dimensional that people were able to just avoid that dimension and beat him. I mean, he had those losses to Mitsugaki and Chad Mendes and Joseph Benavidez. But in his run in the UFC in the last, I would say, you know, 3 years, he has been almost unstoppable. You know, he has had that stretch now of about 7 wins in his last 8 fights, and his last 3 were all stoppage wins by submission. You know, Yahya is getting more and more dangerous, the more we see him, and I've been so impressed with what he's been able to accomplish, considering that this is a guy with pretty much no striking to his game whatsoever. For him to be able to consistently close the distance, get fights to the floor, and get finishes, and to do it without an elite wrestling game is just incredibly impressive. But to be taking on a guy like Ricky Simone, I think is very dangerous for Yahya. Simone is a very well-rounded fighter. This guy has excellent striking ability. He has good power on the feet, good technique. And if Simone is able to utilize distance properly, it can really nullify Yahya's game. I mean, Yahya is all about closing the distance, getting a hold of his opponent, dragging them to the ground, and then finding a limb or a north-south choke or an arm triangle or something, advancing to a dominant position and putting his opponent away. But if Simone is able to keep this fight upright and avoid going to the canvas, I think Simone is actually going to be in a really good spot. I mean, just considering how much better of a striker he is than Yahya, and then Simone has a pretty solid grappling background as well. And it should be he should be well-versed enough on the ground to understand that it would take him like a decade to catch up with Rani Yahya on the ground. So if he really wants to be competitive in this fight, he needs to keep this fight standing because that's clearly where his edge is. And obviously, Rani Yahya's edge is on the ground. So it's going to boil down to who can impose their will in this fight. And, you know, typically I would side with the grappler, but, you know, Yahya does not have an easy path to get this fight to the floor. He needs to, you know, try some kind of clinch or trip or something, because he's not just going to be shooting in for a double leg and blasting his opponent through the canvas. That's just not his style. That's not how he's typically able to get fights to the floor. So I think he's going to have his hands full trying to get this fight to the floor. I think Simone will hold back a little bit on the feet, just making sure he doesn't overextend and give Yahya that easy takedown opportunity. And I think Simone will do just enough to keep this fight upright and to win this fight. I don't think Simone is going to be pulling the trigger in terms of looking to put Yaya away on the feet and really step up the aggression there, because, you know, the more aggressive you are on the feet, the more likely that you end up getting taken down. So I think it'll be kind of a ho-hum out point type of fight. I only way I see it being finished is if Yaya does get this to the floor and latches hold of some limb or something and torques it to the point where he cannot, where Simone can't stick around in the fight any longer. But I think Simone actually does get the job done. I think he keeps his distance. I think he, keeps popping a jab in Yaya's face. And I think at some point he either hurts Yaya enough to set up a finish, or at least outpoints Yaya enough to win a decision. So my pick is going to be Ricky Simone as well. Now, moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the middleweight division, we have Israel Adesanya, who is 15-0, taking on former champion Anderson Spider Silva, who is 34-8 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Adesanya open -400, the comeback on Anderson Silva, +280. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we're seeing -540 on Adesanya, the comeback +365 on Silva. And looking across the market, it's about 5-1. And it's dropping a little bit as well. It was almost 6-1 in some spots earlier as well, but now we're starting to see some buyback on Anderson Silva. So early on, it was Adesanya money. Now we're seeing some buyback on Anderson Silva. Not a surprise. I mean, if you have one of the best all-time fighters, arguably the greatest of all time, as people like to say, with Anderson Silva, and it's hard to argue that. I mean, the guy, what he accomplished in his career, and just what an amazing legend the guy is, you know, he's going to get some money. So, at the betting window for sure. And lately, what we've seen, man, we've seen some of these guys that we think are pretty much past it and maybe on the decline show some life. I mean, look at Cowboy Cerrone, look at Jose Aldo. Again, I mean, you can kind of obviously argue those situations because Anderson Silva's probably a more declined fighter, obviously, but at this point, but still, he could show some life. And if he does, it should be a fairly interesting fight because you have two of the best strikers that have ever stepped in the cage going out of here. I mean, Adesanya himself has said he used to look up to Anderson Silva so much. I mean, the guy was, you know, just a role model of his and an idol of his. And now he's in there, you know, facing him. And again, mentally, Adesanya says he doesn't care. He's going to go out there and destroy him. It doesn't matter at this point or whatnot. So, and I believe that. I mean, that's the kind of attitude that he has to have to be successful. And he seems to have no problem having that attitude. I mean, he's definitely mentally and physically, Adesanya's doing things right. And the improvement that he's shown so far has been great. So, I mean, it's kind of a passing of the torch. Both fighters, again, are strikers. Both of them utilize their ground skill more so, and Moses, I should say, to keep the fight upright. So again, wrestling in reverse, use that takedown defense to keep the fight upright and just outstrike your opponents. Now, of course, Anderson Silva is a BJJ black belt, so he's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu expert as well, and he has that. I mean, he submitted his share of opponents inside the cage as well, but more so than anything else, he's a striker. I mean, he doesn't utilize that jiu-jitsu nearly as much as he should throughout the years. So that said, here he's not going to probably get the shot because Adesanya, obviously his takedown defense is good enough where he's going to probably keep it upright, and Silva's not going to probably go for takedown. So we should see what we want, and should be an all striking affair here, and it should go back and forth a little bit, but Adesanya is going to probably be hit less, and he's going to be the more effective striker moving forward. And of course, he's a younger, fresher fighter. He's got a better chin at this point. So everything, I mean, you're seeing the line where it is now, only because it's such a tough matchup for Silva. I mean, Anderson Silva could go out there and still compete and beat a lot of middleweights, a lot of high caliber middleweights, obviously, but matchups are everything in this matchup. I mean, he's just looking in the mirror and facing a better version of himself at this point in 2019. Sadly, that's basically what it comes down to. So I think Adesanya is the future of the middleweight division. I mean, what he did to Derek Brunson in his last fight was really impressive. I needed to see that from Adesanya because, I mean, obviously he's been taken down in the UFC, and I thought that was definitely a flaw he had to address. And Brunson being one of the best wrestlers on the roster, I mean, him stuffing some of those takedowns were pretty impressive. So if he could keep improving that aspect of his game like that, man, I mean, this guy, how are you going to beat this guy? You're going to have to just get lucky and land something on him if you're not able to take this guy down. So it's going to be a tough task for a lot of people. So Adesanya could very well be the future middleweight champion we're looking at here, and I think he's going to have a successful Australia debut against Anderson Silva, the legend here, and get a win over, you know, one of the all-time greats. And what a, you know, obviously a great mark on his resume that would be. So Adesanya it is. I mean, not much more to say about this fight. Again, I just hope Anderson Silva goes out there and at least performs at a decent level. I don't want to see him go out there and get smoked or perform, you know, at a level that we're all going to kind of feel bad for him. So I hope he's at least competitive, or he's going to perform up to the ability we're kind of used to seeing from him. And I hope Adesanya still performs well and gets the job done here as well. So that said, should be another classic. I'm looking forward to it a lot. Adesanya is my pick, and I think he probably gets it done, maybe by knockout, but if not, he'll get the job done on the scorecards either way.
You know, it's been a long time since we've seen Anderson Silva compete inside the octagon, not since UFC 208. So I'm excited that we're finally having it happen now. And you know, Anderson Silva against Adesanya, I mean, two guys with very similar styles. Obviously Anderson Silva has a better ground game, but you know, who cares, because you know, he doesn't really have an easy path to get this fight to the floor unless he knocks Adesanya down. And on the feet, both these guys are just so devastating, with their ability to predict what their opponent's going to do, to get into the flow of the fight and use their long gangly limbs and, just perform devastating maneuvers. I mean, Adesanya, just brings back those good memories of Anderson Silva's dominant title run whenever you watch him compete. And I'm a believer now. Now that he's, you know, kind of passed some tests against some wrestlers, against some really tough opponents, and, done it with flying colors, I'm definitely a believer in Israel Adesanya. I think that this guy could be a future champion. As long as, you know, he doesn't run into somebody that can repeatedly put him on his back easily. I think, you know, Adesanya is a very, very dangerous, devastating striker on the rise. And, you know, Anderson Silva, you know, as exciting and entertaining as he's been throughout his career, you gotta remember too that he's 43 years old now. That became very apparent in his fight that he ended up losing to Michael Bisping, where, you know, he kept repeatedly getting clipped and hurt on the feet. You know, the old Anderson Silva never would have even let Michael Bisping hit him once. And for Anderson to almost get finished a couple times by Bisping, just speaks volumes. You know, Bisping's now retired. He's on commentary. He's doing all kinds of stuff with the UFC, but, Anderson's still plugging away at 43 years old, and now he's facing a 29-year-old killer. So, you know, I'm not that optimistic that Silva's going to make it through this fight. I think at some point Adesanya does clip him and hurt him and pull him away. Silva is going to have to fight so technically sound and just absolutely perfect without making one little mistake, and I just don't think he'll be able to do that. You know, Silva wasn't able to avoid getting hit hard by some fighters that just don't even have half the striking ability that Adesanya does. Adesanya's jab is lethal. His straight punches are lethal. His kicks are lethal. You know, everything this guy does can end a fight. So I think at some point he lands something and Anderson Silva goes down and stays down. So my pick is going to be Israel Adesanya. I think the betting public is on the right path here by really stacking the odds against Anderson Silva. The 14-year age gap is massive. And while Anderson Silva has the same level of talent, I just don't think he's able to utilize that talent, at least to the point that he used to be able to do. So my pick is going to be Israel Adesanya. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening in the middleweight division, we have champion Robert Whittaker taking on challenger Kelvin Gastelum. Whittaker is 21-4, and Gastelum is 15-3 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Whitaker open minus 245, the comeback on Gaslam plus 175. Right now, what you're seeing over at BetDSI is minus 240 plus 195. So solid opener here, and line margins is tightening up, but staying relatively close to where it opened. So two-way action coming in this fight as well. Kind of creeped up a little bit more towards Whitaker. Now it's coming back down towards Gaslam a little bit as well. And there is two-way action on this fight overall. And we're going to continue to see that as well. A lot of people, a lot of respectable opinions out there like Whitaker in this spot, obviously. I mean, what he's accomplished, and I mean, the guy's just phenomenal, really. Moving up from welterweight and then the run that he's had at middleweight facing the competition that he has, outstanding. I mean, the guy's dynamite in both hands. He's got great takedown defense, just a powerhouse, tough as nails, conditioning through the roof. Smart fighter. I mean, everything you'd like to see in a champion. And again, he's faced a high level competition. I mean, there's two wins over Romero. I think Romero is probably one of the most difficult outs in the middleweight division, despite not wearing the strap, obviously. It's just the skill set that he brings, because he's got that knockout power. He's got the wrestling. It's just such a tough matchup for a lot of fighters. And Whitaker was able to beat him twice. Now, granted, both the decisions were really, really close, and he squeaked by those and took some serious damage in those fights as well. But I mean, just getting a win over Romero like he did back-to-back fights, very impressive. I mean, how many people could say that? How many people could beat Romero twice? That's outstanding. That's, before that, his win over Jacare, Brunson. I mean, the guy has just rolled since he's moved up to 185, and nothing's stopping him. His chin looks like it's stronger, even though, again, he did absorb some punishment and get hurt in the Romero fight. The guy's just a warrior. He's got no quit in him, man. So, again, he's at the top of the food chain. He's the champion right now at 185, deservingly so. He's put in the work, and he's just a phenomenal champion to have. Gaslam, on the other hand, man, another guy fighting at welterweight, moving up, having a ton of success at middleweight. His only setback recently was against Weidman, and he had Weidman in a lot of trouble in that fight as well. The size and just a matchup with Weidman, though, eventually ended up getting him in that third round, but he was doing well in that fight. So, that said, he's faced some bigger competition, though, as well in middleweights. I mean, even that Jacare Souza fight that he just got the W in, it was a very close competitive fight. But he proved that he can fight against the bigger guys and the skilled guys and just a different type of matchups in the middleweight division. So even though Gaslam's on the shorter size and he is a little small, I mean, physically strong, yes, he is. He can compete with these guys. But, I mean, he's definitely, like, as far as the length, he's on the short end of the stick. Now, in this matchup against Whitaker, though, obviously he's only got a two-inch reach discrepancy here. So as far as pure reach goes, so it's not too bad. And, again, he makes up for that with just his speed, his tenacity, his power. Gaslam obviously has a good wrestling background to go along with it as well. And, I mean, once he just lands that punch, man, once he just has that precision and that speed, a lot of people just crumble underneath Gaslam's power as well. So a lot to like, and deservingly he gets his title shot, I think, especially after, again, recent run he went on. And I'm sure eventually he'll run it back with Weidman and try to revenge that loss that he had recently. Outside of that, man, if you look at Gaslam's fight, and just in the UFC roster, even back at welterweight, the only losses that he really had were against Neil Magny, and that was a crazy fight that could have actually went his way, that went to the scorecards in a five-round just crazy war. That he lost a split decision. Then the Tyron Woodley fight that he lost another split decision. So different judges scoring those fights, he could have won them. So realistically, he could have one loss to Weidman the whole time he's been in the UFC. So again, that's remarkable to say. So I'm expecting fireworks from this fight as well. The way these guys match up against each other, man, I mean, I think Whitaker obviously is the more talented. He's bigger. He's the more talented striker overall. He's got great takedown defense, so he should be able to keep this fight upright, and he could be able to outstrike Gaslam here. But the more I think about it, the more I think Gaslam could realistically sneak a punch in there and catch Whitaker on his chin with that speed, with that power, follow up, and maybe finish him off as well. So I don't think there's a lot of value at Whitaker at this price. I know a lot of people are kind of saying that this stylistically is a great matchup for him, and I understand it. And I'm going to pick Whitaker to win this fight. But at the betting window is where I hesitate a little bit here. 2.5 to 1 against that Gaslam power. And I think actually his size here and his speed advantage is going to come into play. And I think we're all kind of underestimating him in this spot a little bit as well. Because even though Romero is a tough fighter and Whitaker was able to absorb that punishment, that speed and power of Gaslam is just a little bit of a different breed. And I think that could seriously present Whitaker with a lot of problems. So I would not recommend going out there and just laying some serious chalk on Whitaker, two and a half to one or so, 220s, 230s out there. I think we're disrespecting Gastelum just a little bit too much where the line is right now. Now, if this line dips under 2-1, you start seeing minus 180, 190, around that range. Just, I mean, again, it's a ball game where the lines do matter. I mean, the value is accordingly. And I think it depends where this line is. If the line dips a little bit, Whitaker will have some value. If the line continues to climb the other way, then Gastelum, obviously we open up some value on him even more so. So I think if you're going to bet this fight, take a stab at Gastelum by knockout. As far as the props go, most books should have a prop on this fight. That's the way you want to go. If you're going to bet Whitaker, I could see him getting a finish as well, because Whitaker could finish most people in the middleweight division, but Gastelum's pretty tough. I think he's going to be hard to get rid of. So maybe Whitaker by decision and Gastelum by knockout if you're going to bet this as far as props go. But outside of that, I think it is a dog or pass situation. But with that said, I still like Whitaker here. I do think he is the better fighter in this matchup. I think he should outstrike Whitaker, or he should outstrike Gastelum as it goes. So it's hard to not pick the champion, especially, you know, him being undefeated, obviously, in Australia, having the crowd behind him. I mean, he seems to kind of absorb all that, and it makes him even stronger when he's in that situation. So hard to pick against Whitaker in Australia, especially. So I'm going to pick him to win. But, man, I'm not as confident as everybody else willing to lay that chalk on Whitaker here in this spot. So be careful if you're betting this fight. But my pick is going to be Whitaker to win and defend his title.
And I agree. Robert Whitaker, Kelvin Gastelum should be a very exciting, competitive bout. The big difference here, though, is Whitaker, in my opinion, has significantly better conditioning. I think he can push a high pace, and I think he can wear Gastelum down. And if this fight does reach the championship rounds, I think it's almost a certainty that Whitaker either finishes Gastelum in the later rounds, or he at least wins a decision, because Gastelum just won't be able to keep up. I mean, that's just not his style. I mean, Gastelum's made it 5 rounds in the past, but not at the pace that Whitaker fights. And I think in this contest, Gastelum is going to have to be kind of that knockout or bust type style, where he's just going to have to really turn it on early when his power and speed and athleticism is still at its peak. Because if he paces himself, I think Whitaker will just dance circles around him. Robert Whitaker has conditioning for days. He can go a 10-round fight, no problem. And that's just not something that Kelvin Gastelum can do. Gastelum has the power. He has the ability to finish this fight and to win and become the UFC middleweight champion. He just needs to do it in the first few rounds before he starts to get tired, before his pace starts to slow, and before Whitaker completely takes over. Because the longer this fight goes, the worse it's going to be. And I think Gastelum is extremely talented. He's shown that he has some good pop in his hands. We've seen him obviously knock out guys like Tim Kennedy and Michael Bisping. We've seen him drop Rick Story. We've seen him smash Vitor Belfort. So we know what this guy's capable of. I think he hurt Chris Weidman in their fight before Weidman eventually came back and put him away. So Gastelum is definitely a capable fighter and an improving striker. And Robert Whitaker, we've seen him get knocked out back in welterweight, and we've seen him get hurt in the fights against Romero. So especially the most recent one. So, Whitaker could be vulnerable here if Gastelum's able to connect with something really solid. But other than that, I just don't see a path to victory here, because Whitaker's takedown defense is too good. I don't think Gastelum can score takedowns. I don't think Gastelum can put Whitaker on his back and keep him there. I don't think Gastelum's submission game will come into play. I think this fight stays standing for pretty much all 5 rounds if it goes 5. And Gastelum is going to be huffing and puffing by round 3. So if Gastelum does not put away Whitaker, and I don't think he does, then I think Whitaker either wins a decision one-sided or really turns it on as Gastelum slows and Gastelum away with strikes. maybe in the early fourth round. So my pick's going to be Robert Whittaker. I think he's still going to be champion at the end of this event. And I think that he has quite a few more defenses under his belt before maybe running into somebody that's really scary, like an Israel Adesanya. So Whittaker is my pick, and I think that he will still be the champ. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 234. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOB Premium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.